Hybrid meeting, first one.
Okay, good morning, everybody. It's nice to be back finally in our seats. We are socially distanced and everyone's still with us. It's nice to be back. Today is Tuesday, October 6th, it's 9 a.m. We'd like to call this meeting to order. Commissioner Hatch, would you please lead us in invocations?
Heavenly Father, we want to thank you for another day. Thank you for all our many blessings. May we all be kept safe and healthy, free from disease and harm. Also guide us in all that we do. In this pandemic, grant us all peace. All these things we ask in your heavenly name. Amen.
Commissioner Lopez, please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you, gentlemen. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hess. Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Here. Approval of the agenda. Any changes or additions?
No changes to the agenda, Commissioner.
Okay, motion, please.
Move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Yes.
Commissioner Hess.
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Yes. Consideration of minutes. Regular meeting minutes of September 15, 2020.
I make a motion to approve the regular meeting. Second.
Commissioner Felix, excuse me, Commissioner Hess.
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Yes. Item B, BOE special meeting minutes of September 23rd, 2020. Any concerns or questions? Okay, motion.
Motion to approve the BOE special meeting minutes of September 23rd, 2020.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Special meeting minutes of September 30th, 2020.
No questions or comments? I make a motion to approve special meeting minutes of September 30th, 2020. Second motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Correspondence, Commissioner DeVos.
Good morning. A couple of meetings that we've had again, the conversation the Attorney General goes on. We are getting closer to the formula allocation proposal, and I hope that all of you received one of the proposed calculations. We will continue to work with them, and certainly very two-way street conversation really is with the way the conversation is going on. So I'll keep you posted. There is a meeting next week, a meeting to present the final allocation distribution proposal. And then, of course, from there on, we expect the conversation to widen a little bit more. And another meeting that we had yesterday, the CCI, Colorado County Incorporated, we had a meeting in which, if you'll recall, the entire membership, all 63 counties or 62, however many of the membership were actually polled and asked how many of those counties would be interested in having a winter conference. And the response was that 60% support the idea of having some type of a face-to-face hybrid kind of thing. And so yesterday, the CCI board came back to the vote. And we want to honor those individuals that want to have that face-to-face. It's going to be somewhat limited to our numbers because it's going to be held in El Paso County. And we have to work with El Paso County and CDPHE and follow their guidelines 100%. Although this is going to be in December, stay tuned and posted. The capacity that right now the El Paso County can host will be 175. And the hotel feels that with that number, they can provide. They want to have at least face to face. At this point in time, we don't know the length of the conference, might be a day and a half, maybe a 2 day max. And then, for those individuals that don't want to go face to face, don't have the opportunity to actually do it virtually. Now, in all of it is depending upon what happens. If there was a big spike in the Placer County's dial pack, obviously we're going to have to go to Plan B. And so that is to be determined. Those are my updates.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Hess.
On September 23rd, I attended the Health Board meeting, and they wanted me to relay to everybody there's going to be a diabetes self-management education and support class. It's free. It starts October 24th. The partners involved in this planning will be saluted Mount San Rafael, Spanish Peaks Regional Health Center, Center for Community Care, and Diabetes Educational Accreditation. Anybody, it'll be Wednesdays from 3 to 5 for 4 weeks, taught by Amanda Taylor. And if anybody is interested, call the health department. Brief COVID update, 29 cases in Los Angeles County, 6 active, 1 hospitalization. In Warfield County, 26 cases, 9 active, 1 dead. On September 28th through the 30th, rapid response testing. There was a rapid response test in Walsenburg. It was coordinated with the CDPHE in Warfield County. They tested 871 people in 3 days, 3 positives out of this summer. The state has requested, and there will be a testing site in Los Angeles County starting October 8th. There are a lot of positives coming out of Pueblo County. The MAP program has taken off. The medical assisted treatment ban is the use of medical medications combined with behavioral health and therapy to approach the treatment of substance use disorders. The health department has hired a behavioral health specialist to help in both Los Angeles County and Warfield County with those services helping out with both case management and data management. And they wanted me to tell everybody the flu season is already active and flu shots are available at the health department. Make a point.
Thank you, Commissioner. I attended the Council of Governments board meeting a week ago, and we had finalized our budget for the year. The Council of Governments also had a successful Saturday food drive at the County Fairgrounds this past Saturday, which was assisted by our VFW friends, along with our Veteran Service Officer, Mr. Ray. It was a huge success, and the director, Veronica Mays, of that agency said that they were a bunch of rock stars that did a great job assisting getting the food out at the time. Their Council of Governments is poised to move forward for our following year. They are having some issues with funding, as the rest of us there are concerned with some of their ability and other than get a lot of the revenue sources that we have on. Basis is that the our chair partners and I also convened via Zoom 2 weeks ago, and sorry, I got a text message from somebody downstairs. Can you see me now? Okay. OPI event, and we had one great success for the year. One of our first or second loans to come out of Los Angeles County is now completed, and we've reached that point where that funding will be available to be loaned out to other entities. OPI is trucking along. It's very successful right now with the $5,000 microloans that we have available for small businesses that do not need to go to review board that will come directly to the chairman and myself. So any businesses out there that are still in need of lending through non-traditional lenders, Council or OPI is there available to assist. I have a term meeting this Thursday night. Won't be attending. I'll be on that next board meeting. And we also still have grants available here for the COVID relief fund. Please reach out to Mr. Norton or our administration office to see how to proceed, or our website, Los Angeles County and Yahoo.com. Up to $5,000 in grants is available for our local residents, businesses, I'm sorry, for assistance on COVID relief. And we'll move forward with public comment. We have anybody signed up? Yeah, nobody signed up. We'll be here. So, Sharon, do you have any public comment things?
I have.
Anybody signed up online? Or if anybody is online and would like to speak?
Excuse me, no, there wasn't anybody signed up online.
If anybody is online and would like to speak, we'll give you one or two to speak. 3 minutes of voice count.
I don't see anybody who looks like they're expressing an interest to make public comment. Yes, sir, we do. First is Trinidad State Junior College's Tony DeAngelis regarding the COSI funding.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for having us this morning and allowing us the opportunity to present today about the COSI Opportunity Scholarship Initiative. With me today is Dr. Epper, president of Trinidad State Junior College, and Lori Lasky from Adams State University Foundation. And before we get started fully with the presentation, I'd like to ask Dr. Epper just to provide an update about some of the things happening at Trinidad State.
Thanks, Tony. Good morning, commissioners. I'd just like to add my thanks to what Tony said for giving us the opportunity to speak today in support of the Colorado Opportunity Scholarship Initiative. And also would like to express my appreciation for your past support of COSI. And the scholarship dollars that your support has helped to unlock for students throughout Los Angeles County to attend either Trinidad State or Adams State. I thought I would take just a moment to give you a quick update on how things are going at the college. As you might imagine, it has been a challenging year, to be sure. But we are open for business, we're serving students, and so far we've experienced really very few problems with regards to outbreaks or COVID incidents on campus. But we also realize that that could change very quickly, and thus we are ready to implement layers of plans if the need should arise. But for now, we're in week 8 of the semester with mostly in-person classes, and it's going well so far. Our enrollment picture, just to give you a little bit about the numbers, we're down about 7% for FTE, that's full-time equivalent students, and we're down about 13% for headcount. This is actually less of a loss than what we were predicting, but it is nonetheless painful to our bottom line. Right now, if we are able to bring students back in the spring, which is what we are planning, we are adjusting our forecast to about a 10% FTE loss for the year. And what that translates to budget-wise is it's about $1 million hit to our general fund. So that means using about $1 million in our reserve funding. And while that's a very hard hit, what I'm even more concerned about is fiscal year 22, when the state may or may not have federal stimulus dollars to help backfill the cuts to higher ed. So you may remember that higher ed as a whole throughout the state of Colorado was cut 58% by the state legislature to our general fund. That translated to about $525 million, and $450 million of that was supplemented through CARES Act funding. But we don't know what next year is going to bring. So with all of that kind of grim news, I would also like to share with you some positive news. with regard to some recent grant support that we've received at the college. So you may have seen some press releases or articles in the news about a few of these, but we received $1.66 million from the Attorney General's office to reactivate our construction trades program. And we're really excited about that program that is coming together this fall and next spring. We also just received $200,000 from the Nature Conservancy through an anonymous donor for our trails management and construction program, which will be implemented in partnership with the partners that are working on the opening of Fisher's Peak State Park. We also received $400,000 in funding from DOLA, the Department of Local Affairs, as well as the TSJC Educational Foundation for our Massari Theater upgrades and to help launch our technical theater program. And then finally, just recently, we were notified that we received a Title V grant for Hispanic serving institutions through the U.S. Department of Education for $3 million. And that will help build up additional student support services, professional development, and technology upgrades. And so all of these, while we are truly grateful and excited to have this additional grant funding, it does not restore the general fund support, which can only come through tuition and state FTE funding. So we're going to be relying on some of these new programs in the CTE area to help us drive enrollment as we come out of the pandemic and help TSJC as well as the entire community come out of this crisis together. So that is my update for you, and I'm happy to answer any questions or just hand it back over to Tony.
Thank you, Mrs. Edward. I will ask the board if we have any questions or concerns. Commissioner Lopez, would you start?
Thank you, Dr. Edward. Thank you for all the updates. It's so important to know that at least the college is looking forward to continue to serve this part of the state. One of the questions I was going to ask you is, what is the enrollment statewide? I know it's probably a decrease. Do you have an idea of what the state as a whole is reporting?
Yes, overall enrollments in community colleges statewide are down further than we are at Trinidad State. So we're feeling good about our position relative to other community colleges. The metro area community colleges are down significantly further, except for Arapahoe Community College. But the other metro colleges are down pretty significantly. And they're attributing that to the fact that their classes are primarily online. And there are a lot of students who are having trouble with that transition. Also, concurrent enrollment has been a challenge for community colleges throughout the state, just with the uncertainties that the K-12 schools and the high schools are facing with regard to being in person or online or hybrid and how those schedules are able to work together with the college schedules. So we had originally predicted a 20% drop in enrollment for this year. So if we end up at 10% down, we're in a better position than we had feared, but nonetheless still in the red and have a lot of ground to make up for.
Thank you.
Commissioner Ness. Thank you, Commissioner. Dr. Ever, I know we've been able to do this in the past, and this is the agile symposium. Can we be reminded of the request and the amount for the funding that you're requesting the county to spend?
I'm sorry, was that question for me or for Tony?
Either one. I can't remember the amount that is requested for this funding. I think we've done 5,000 in the years past. Is that correct? We're looking at it again.
So that is correct in the past support. I was wondering if it might be possible to share my screen and just take you through some of the information we have about COSI.
I think you can put it online. I'm not online, so
that would be great. Thank you.
So it looks like
it
looks like the host hasn't enabled screen sharing. So if that's not something we can do.
Check it now, Tony. I hit it about 20 seconds ago.
Okay, there we go. All right. So is everyone able to see that?
Yes.
As I think everyone's familiar with, and again, I do want to go back and say thank you again for that past support. The Colorado Opportunity Scholarship Initiative, as you may remember, was created to increase the attainment of post-secondary credentials and degrees in an effort to serve, to help underserved students in Colorado. And basically, the Car Opportunity Scholarship Initiative is there to provide accessibility and affordability for students attending both Trinidad State Junior College and Adams State University. Our hope today in coming to you was that as you are looking at your budget process now, we're coming in a little bit earlier than we've done in the past. So our hope is that this may be something that you can consider as you're looking at the budget process for next year and help support and invest in our students from Los Angeles County. These are matching dollars, so any amount that is contributed by Los Angeles County is matched dollar for dollar by the Colorado Department of Higher Education and Colorado Opportunity Scholarship. The match this year that we are eligible for is $16,440, and that is based on free and reduced lunch figures based on Los Angeles County high school seniors. And so we've been around that same range for the last several years, and it's something where we can leverage that support. And I apologize, is everybody able to see the full screen?
Yes.
Okay. So in leveraging that, you know, it's possible if we are able to take full advantage of the allocation for Los Angeles County, we'd have over $33,000 available to students from Los Angeles County in support for attending Trinidad State Junior College and Adams State University. Some of the scholarship criteria really hasn't changed. Of course, they have to be a Colorado resident. They must have graduated from a Los Angeles County high school or be a current resident of the county. They're required to be 250% of Pell. And again, that goes back to helping those underserved students that need that extra support in order to persist in their education and complete their degrees. The slight change that we've made this year is with the GPA. So we've went from 2.5 to 2.25, and that just gives us a little more flexibility in the students that we're looking at that are eligible and those that we're able to support. So students must be, again, full-time degree-seeking students, and they must participate in a rigor-based program, which I'll go through here in just a little bit. Preference is given to past COSI participants, and the thought behind that is to ensure continuity and, again, persistence with our students and ensuring that they are able to take advantage of this opportunity and complete their degree. Unmet need is a consideration with the awarding process. And then lastly, the other slight change that we made to the program. In the past, it was a $1,000 scholarship, but again, for flexibility and in order to help students that may have a little more need, we've changed that to a range of $1,000 to $1,500. The difference again with this scholarship program is the rigor-based program, where we're providing academic tutoring, assistance with financial aid applications, counseling, financial and economic counseling, and just that general support that students may need to help them be successful in attaining that degree. Lori, is there anything that you wanted to add to that?
No, I think that is good. You know, our goal here is really attainment and affordability, and that is one of the things that this program does. And as you can see, both Trinidad State Junior College and Adams State, that falls very well into our missions and what we're trying to do. As Tony mentioned, this support program or the rigors-based program is really our way of making sure that these students make it to completion. That is our goal, is completion for our students. So that's all I need to add, Tony. You're doing great.
Thank you. So, you know, what we're here today to do is to ask for your support in helping with the partnership that we're continuing between Adams State University and Trinidad State Junior College for students from Los Animas County. As I mentioned, the allocation is up to $16,440. Our hope is that, our request is that the county would be able to provide a letter of support for that partnership for ASU and a commitment of funds, whatever that may be. We know that the counties are struggling with competing priorities, and so you know, we just feel that anything that the county may be able to do to support our students in the long run supports our county and provides economic benefits to our region with students having those degrees and being able to be productive and meeting the workforce needs in our region. So the letter of commitment and support we would ask would be provided by December 31st of this year. And then if or any funds that would be paid would not need to be paid until July 1st of 2021. Lori and I are both here to, you know, answer any questions or provide support. As in the past, we do have a template letter that we can provide to you as far as, you know, what you might say in your letter of support and how to address those needs that for our students of Los Animas County.
Thank you, ladies, very much for that. I'd like to add, if we are able to support this funding grant the past couple of years, and we will continue our best to facilitate anything we can in Trinidad State, one of our local partners here in the region. We're very proud of the status that we have, the relationship we have with the county and the junior college at this time. And I'd like just to let you be aware of, if you're not aware of, the Los Angeles County Cares Committee has put forth a ballot measure that is a committee that is will be discussing tonight at Trinidad State Junior College. The 1-8 referendum that will be before our taxpayers this November for the election. Possibilities of that funding will possibly be able to be allocated to organizations such as this COSING if this funding is approved. So there are some really good positions that we are in as a county if that initiative. For the funding that you're requesting, I believe it will be presented to the board between now and one of our next board meetings. As we come into our final budget hearings, we are in the beginning process of our budgets. So Mr. Dornkamp and Mrs. Coberly will be discussing that and presenting that to the board moving forward to see if it is available. So, but it is a nice situation we're in. That initiative gets the support of the community, I think is going to benefit all of us, including your district here involved in the youth of Los Angeles County. So having said that, I thank you all for your time, for your presentations today. Do we have any other questions or concerns or any closing comments?
Louise, this is Christy Coberly. Can I come in and just say something really quickly? I just wanted to let them know that we did budget for COSI in 2020. So I didn't know if they knew that, about any kind of invoice that they're going to send, or if the board is still actually wanting to do that. We did budget for 2020. We're looking at 2021. We haven't actually done that yet. Go ahead, Felix.
Yes, what was that amount of time?
Well, it's a bulk of amount to where, and I thought we did 5,000, but since we didn't do the water festival stuff, there's a little additional in there. So that's up to the commissioners on what they wanted to actually give.
So Christy, I would be happy to send you an invoice, but I probably would want to know the exact amount. Can I have you email that to me?
That'll be up to the commissioners what they want to decide on that, on what we have budgeted in there, since we didn't use some of the funds that we had put aside because of COVID. So that's up to the commissioners to make that decision. So I can have that meeting with Phil Dornkamp, and then he can talk with the commissioners, and I can let you know.
Thank you very much. And we'll get that out as soon as possible.
Sure, you're welcome.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Christy, for letting us know that.
Sure, of course.
Hey, Tony, I had a question. Of all the COSI participants, are they majority vocational technical programs or the regular transfer track curriculum?
It's really a mix of both, Commissioner Lopez, where we have CTE and transfer-based students, you know, so as long as they're meeting that COSI criteria of 250% of Pell and the other requirements, we look at all students. And, you know, it really does make a difference. Lori and I, that's the one part that we miss with kind of the Zoom meetings, is we can't bring students in to demonstrate the impact that the county is having and that COSI is having in helping our students attain those degrees. So it's something that we're very proud of and excited to showcase our students and the goals and the achievements that they're making.
And I can share, last year we actually helped through the eight different counties that we worked with. We served over 84 students with aid to help them succeed. And in this program, they have a tendency to also continue. So we're really excited at that outcome of the persistence of those students.
One of my comments was going to be when you got a presentation on the screen, it's going from 2.5 down to 2.25 GPA. How was that decision reached? I mean, I would have liked to see it go the other way, but please, if you would like to just let us know how that happened.
I think it's more a matter of flexibility in being able to provide opportunities for students. And sometimes with our underserved population of students, they may not be as I don't want to say prepared, but a little bit nervous about school, I guess I'd say. And so I think in allowing that GPA to just go down to the 2.25 level, it gives those students that boost to know that they have somebody that believes in them and can support them through this process and, ideally and hopefully continue on and increase that GPA over time.
And if I could just add really quickly, the rigor-based programs, Commissioner Lopez, that support the students, the funding for those programs are provided from the state in addition to the matching dollars that they provide, and it actually supports a staff position here at TSJC for COSI students. And that's something that's unusual for scholarship programs. So we don't want to just provide funding and then let them go, but we provide that additional wraparound support to really help the students succeed. So those who may be coming in a little more underprepared have additional supports to help them get through.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, thank you for your comments today and for the presentation. And keep in contact with Mr. Garningham and the presentation.
Will do. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, then we have up next the Santa Clara Legends, Ms. Deborah Malone. Ms. Malone, are you on call?
Deborah Malone, you're on.
I'm on. Thank you very much for your time today and the opportunity to talk to the commission about the Scenic Highway of Legends, which is a beautiful day here in Scenic Highway of Legends. I recognize some of you faces from Pell, so I know that this is not a new idea for you. You've lived here, you've recreated on the byways, you've probably got a lot of great memories yourself, but you might not know some recent things that have been going on. I'm going to give you a little history, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a sad story, and I'm going to tell you how maybe you can help us out. The Scenic High, and I also have Marty Hackett on. I've invited her to join me so that if you have any questions, stop me at any time. And I'm sure Marty would have a lot to add as well that maybe I miss. But the Highway of Legends first earned national designation as a U.S. Forest Service byway by the National Forest Scenic Highways. A year later is when the Scenic Highway of Legends was awarded one of the first five scenic byways in the state of Colorado. To qualify for this honor, very high honor, highway corridor must be considered extraordinary, not just beautiful scenery, but it also must have intrinsic qualities that are unique to the area. It has history, it has culture, it offers recreation and wildlife resources. In 2007, the Highway of Legends was identified as the Southern Loop of Colorado's Front Range Trail. And this is a pretty big deal because it's a planned multi-purpose trail. It goes from Wyoming to New Mexico along the Front Range. Now, if we fast forward from 2007, a decade later, Walt Bolton and the Southern Central Council of Governments and the Colorado Department of Transportation initiated the Southern Loop Planning and Environmental Linkage Study. We all know it as the Pell Study. And this was to investigate the highway safety, bicycle multi-use trails, the byway related improvements that need to be done along the corridor to keep it up to snuff. These are excellent plans. A lot of work went into this. It was an 18-month project, and a lot of great suggestions have come about. Today, we also take great satisfaction in knowing that the Scenic Highway of Legends has successfully completed all the Federal Highway Administration's requirements to be considered for designation as a national scenic highway. We would be one of America's byways. And what does that mean to Los Angeles County? Well, as the executive director of the Colorado Department of Transportation will tell you, the economic impact of the Scenic Highway of Legends has a cumulative benefit of $179,747,000 over a five-year time frame. And this was according to the Colorado Scenic Economic Development Analysis Report in 2006. As one of our economically challenged and underserved areas of Colorado, having a national public byway in the Spanish Peaks would prove to be even larger economic drive. Investing in the Scenic Highway of Legends at this time in its investment for advancing the region's goals in economic sustainability and vibrancy. And the opportunities out there couldn't come at a better time. Pell has made this easy to, as a roadmap moving forward. DOLA, GOCO, a lot of others have some grant money available, but it's time to act. And the Scenic Highway of Legends is not funded by any means since 2012. And thanks to the work of volunteers and some very small offerings to help with administrative costs, we've been able to continue to be a Colorado Scenic Byway. And in the past, when the National Scenic Byway Program was in place, a lot of successful marketing projects were put into place regionally and nationally. We were marketing. It included a grant for $280,904 from the Scenic Byway, National Scenic Byway, to build the Trinidad Colorado Welcome Center. So that's a big hunk right there that we've got to enjoy. And currently, it has been an effort even to find funding to complete the minimum tasks required of the byway by the Colorado Scenic and Historic Commission. This is a group of people who have been selected by the governor to serve on as commissioners to look over the 26 byways. Their requirements are not great, but they do take some time and some money. They require, you know, printing and conferences to attend, webinars, meetings, stakeholder meetings, and it comes to a little bit of money. And even with donations, we've been spending about $1,500 a year. That's not a lot, but again, by 2021, we're hoping for the opportunity to have some very large grants that we might be able to acquire and put some of this Pell recommendations into action. So what I'm here for today is I have submitted a memo of understanding to Paul. And it's a document, so it's a Word document, so you can change it as you wish, but I would appreciate your attention to it very soon to get into your 2021 budgeting. What we're asking for is $600 to be paid in January to just help us with the administrative costs over that year. And the reason being, again,
can
is that.
Could you repeat that amount, Ms. Malone? Could you repeat that amount of your question?
I'm sorry?
Could you please repeat that amount? I couldn't hear.
The amount is $600. I know. It's a little. You probably got it in your pocket, right? Sorry. Anyway, and it's not just you. That's the reason. We have adopted a program that's been used successfully by the West Elk Loop Byway. And what they have is each of the counties that are served by the byway are getting this meeting. So both Huerfano and you. Huerfano has signed their MOU for $600. Both the tourism boards have signed their MOUs, and we've also have an MOU from the city of La Vida, and we'd like to be talking soon, Marty and I, with the town of Trinidad. So altogether, we're going to have enough to cover at least the amount we had last year. And again, that's just getting up and running and keeping our Colorado designation basically intact. There is a list of requirements that they ask us to do. And nobody owns us. So in addition, we're not asking for a lot of money, but in addition to that, sometimes you know, it's when you pay for this, you feel more like you own it and you take better care of it. And it's your care and your support and your attention that we are also very interested in. Thanks to Felix, who has attended some meetings. We now have Walt Bolton on our board, which is fabulous. And Marty's sending out a letter asking for people to step forward as well that would serve on subcommittees. We just think we have a lot of opportunities up ahead, and we just don't have the manpower and the resources to do what we need to be doing right now. Did you hear the rest?
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Malone. I will now entertain any comments from our board chief, Michelle Bissett.
Then, Marty, thank you so much for being here, and certainly beautiful backdrop you have.
Thank you.
Amazing. So, no, we understand the importance and the significance of this highway, and definitely, as we've talked before, certainly funding is what's going to make it go forward. Thank you for presenting this to us, and certainly we'll take that under consideration, and because it's a supporting project that is connected with the latest presentation of CBOT, the Bell study, and then this group basically working in tandem to accommodate the connectivity between the 42nd State Park to the local Trinidad State Park and the rest of Highway 12. So great presentation, I appreciate it, and definitely we'll see where we go from here.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Just thank you very much for your time and support. I appreciate, I recognize your faces from the Pell study, so I know you know this is important too. Thank you. Marty, anything to say?
Ms. Malone and Mrs. Hackett, thank you. I've been a supporter of Highway of Legends since I was young. Matter of fact, looking at a book on my phone that was drafted and written many, many years ago by Miss Jane Kurtz and Mr. Alan Bakarowski, who was illustrated by Brian Kyle, 12 Stories from the Scenic Highway Legends, which we are getting a copy of this weekend. My family will be receiving a copy from Mr. Bakarowski's son, who was a good friend of mine, who will be coming to visit the
Oh, yeah.
Who will be traveling up back and forth on Highway of Legends this weekend for now, it's 1960. So we will be reading the stories. When we saw the book, we really thought it'd be great to sit around the campfire at night to read the stories to our kids overall. And all of us have young children at this time. So I've been a supporter of this Highway of Legends for a long, long time. I think this board is as well, Felix and I, and Tony, even Commissioner Dean Molter, when he was on board, were part of the Cal studies and the meetings we've been going for with that. So thank you for the presentation. I think this is something we could consider moving forward and assisting your organization. And I don't know if you heard earlier the comments I made regarding the Los Angeles County Cares Committee with their 1A referendum. If that passes, then that might open up more opportunities to assist your organization. So pass the word. Anyway, thank you both for your time today, and have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Okay. Going on to elected officials updates. Sheriff Nemeret contacted me that he is in training today. So we have Sheriff Nemeret on the call. So we'll move forward with our county treasurer. Ms. Lane Eddy, are you on the line today?
Yes, I am here. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis, the only thing I have to mention right now is, I don't know if you had the chance to check on how many that can occupy the chambers for my tax sale. As of yet, I'm getting a lot of phone calls and they're wondering what we're going to be doing.
Well, we're looking at it right now, not a whole lot, maybe about 10 with the seating arrangements we have, how many would you be expecting today?
Last year we had probably between 95 and 100.
In the chambers? In here?
Yes.
We can do some researching to see where else we can hold that size of a crowd. I think we could possibly, that is in December, correct?
Yes, the first working day in December, which would be December the 1st, would be on a Tuesday.
Well, that probably, as long as the COVID is still in place, the restrictions, that probably won't be viable for us. Mr. Durenkamp will research other county locations at this time, or even if we can possibly utilize one of our other partners in the community facilities, we can reach out to other groups. I think Trinidad Junior College of Missouri holds 50 right now with COVID. Durenkamp?
Donna, what are other counties doing? Are they holding virtual auctions?
Online auctions? The smaller ones are all going, they're doing like we're doing, the live. The bigger counties like Denver are doing virtual, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure at first blush we have any place that I can think of that can accommodate 90 people and still sustain the 28 square feet between each participant. Maybe check with those other counties and see how they're doing their online auctions. I know there are auction houses, I believe, that perform that type of service online.
Like Orphanage County, I believe they're holding theirs, or they did at the theater. And I don't know if we'll get 195 this year because of the COVID. That I really don't know.
Possibly look at a hybrid like we're doing today for this board meeting, Mr. Knight?
I couldn't hear you, Luis. I'm sorry.
Can we look at doing a hybrid if we have some technical assistance for you? I know I'm technically challenged, but if we could assist your office in any way to do a hybrid way and limit the amount of people in here, why would that help?
Yeah, I believe so.
Mr. Durenkamp suggested if we could reach out to other counties to see how they're doing it. And then in the meantime, I'll look out to reach out to other entities in the community. I don't know if the gymnasium would be sufficient. You'd have to take your computers. You'd have to be remote. You'd have to set up a cash system, and I don't know how secure that would be. Didn't have secure some issues that involve. I think the hybrid would probably be the most effective and safe way. That way, you wouldn't have to leave the courthouse in your step. But let's look into it moving forward and go from there.
Thank you.
Okay. Our clerk and recorder's office, any on the call?
Yeah, this is Joseph and Peach is here too, and we've just got a couple of things. Our mail ballots are going to be dropped at the Denver Central Mail facility on Friday, so then Monday being a federal holiday, people should probably start receiving them next Tuesday or Wednesday as far as ballots. And just an update, I did send out an email this morning to everybody just letting them know We're going to have a little bit of an outage on our main line as Aiden is working with CenturyLink to port our numbers to our new system. So we are going to have a little bit of a disruption this morning. We're hoping it's just for a little while. So I will send out an email letting everybody know that our phone system is up and running. But right now we are having a problem with the main line this morning. And I think that's our couple of updates for right now.
Okay, thank you both. Do we have anyone from our county assessor's office? Ms. Lotto?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I have nothing to add. We're just moving on and wrapping up and getting ready towards tax roll.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Do we have anyone from our district attorney's office on that to give a report today? Or our coroner's office? Okay, moving right along, unfinished business. I don't believe we have any. Public hearing starting at 10 o'clock, 5 minutes to 10. Could we take a 5 minute recess before we start this hearing? Your motion, please.
Make a motion to take a 5 minute recess.
Second motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
How long have you been waiting?
No, I just got out, so I didn't want to accidentally get in and then have that
go. Okay, I was going to say, because I've been looking, but I sure...
No, I didn't want to be...
I don't think they saw it because it was basically
yeah.
But I was like, I hope they do.
No, they did. I realized I'm not right away. Anyways,
okay.
I
Are you going to end up spraying any of that, what do they call it? Out there by
yeah, after the first frost. After the way they smell the frost.
For sure, love. Is that? Trust me, drought.
You know, here it's one of those where using in drought conditions.
They just survive.
And if it gets real bad, they'll just stay moving in the ground. They'll stay moving in the ground for years.
Yeah.
And then once you get the moisture, it'll pop up.
Yeah. So I was putting this mask on, and I pulled the little tab off, so I tied it up. I just took it off, and I pulled it up. So now when I just
lower it, I'll just turn this
back. I'm going to
just go ahead and there. It's all the breathing.
Yeah. You're much more careful.
We have no witnesses today.
I didn't know if the fact that we were not presenting in person or it must be in the real virtual.
Sure, okay.
So, Bob, you want to go first on your testimony? Use the standard practice, right?
Yeah. The first item on your public hearing is for David Baca Construction. They're seeking to construct a new office building just east of the city limits out by the movie picture show house.
Okay, hold on a second, Bob. We have to be the universe. Oh, yeah, go up there and have you go up there.
We're good.
Okay, I didn't need a motion to reconvene our work down the commission meeting, please.
Motion to reconvene.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. And back at our board meeting, we are going to move into our public hearing scheduled for 10 a.m. Item A is an SUP 2020-002 by Baca Construction. We will have this hearing, and testimony will be taken, and we will start with Mr. Bob Lucero, who is with our planning and zoning. Everybody will have the opportunity to give comments and testimony to this, but before they do so, we'll be sworn in. This time, Ms. Nelson, please swear to Mr. Lucero.
Mr. Lucero, do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes. First item is David Baca Construction is proposing to build a new office building just east of Trinidad out by the movie picture show house. I went before the planning commission on September the 8th, and the planning commission made a recommendation for approval with no conditions added on there.
And pretty concise and short and sweet on this application. Where exactly is the facility located?
It's right next to, it's just, facility will just be west of the CIG plant there.
On Highway 350.
Yeah, he split that up into two lots. He then went to a minor facility subdivisions, made it two lots. He thought he had one sold, but
because of the time delay, I guess the property owner kind of backed out on it. So I'm just doing this show right now.
And on this particular property, there was no sewage utilities.
He's close enough. I think he told me he would be city utilities there. And he may have city sewer there. It's close.
The plans are to utilize the facility as an office for his construction company, or is it?
Yeah, those construction. Yeah, just the office for his construction.
And that subdivision, is that part of the?
No, it's not in the subdivision. It's just, I think there was, I don't know how many acres were there. So we just made two lots out of it. He did do the access permit, got one of the Department of Transportation. If you go by there, I think they already, you know, concrete. There was a little driveway in there.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, so that's again.
So CDOT's good to go with
it? Yeah, no, I didn't get any complaints or from any of the gates of landowners. So.
Any other questions? Okay, well, anything else, Mr. Zero?
Not on that one.
Okay, do we have anybody on the call to give testimony regarding Bopper Construction SUP 2020-002? Anybody?
No, sir, I don't.
Or is it as if somebody's on the call chat? Okay, then I guess we can entertain a motion at this time.
Motion to approve the supplement 2020-002 of construction.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess? Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Congratulations, Mr. Baca. Item B, proposed amendments to Los Angeles County Land Use Regulations, solar farms. Ms. Nelson?
Do you need to swear amendments under oath?
Please remind you, Mr. Lazar, you're still under oath.
Thank you.
Mr. Lazar.
We have before you is amendment to the land use regulations. I don't know if you guys remember back in 2015, San Isabel Solar came in and they did a solar facility out just east of Rundle. At that time, I was not the planning director in there. I was asked to help Ken Robinson handle some of the planning stuff because he was not familiar with planning land use. When he got the application, I went before Dixie Newman for clarification as to if this had to go through 1041 regulations. She informed me at that time that back in 2010 that the county commissioners and planning land use changed the regulations for renewable energy, which included, at that time, it was mostly just wind towers. Solar facilities probably were just kind of being talked about. But she said the solar farm facilities should have been included in the regulations with the wind farm. Well, so we went forward with the application. Later on, when I became doing the planning and land use, the solar farm facilities was not in there, okay? So what I did is I came back and I did some research on some solar regulations. There's not a whole lot of them out there. Uh,
basically our regulations, if we implement them with the wind power regulations, are quite substantially more than a lot of the solar facilities, which is, I think, was the intention originally in 2010, was to have it in there. So that's all. If you look through there, I just added solar. I put a definition for the solar farm utility, and then just add solar farms. And what this does is, it's not just a really standard SUP like the one you just heard before. There's specific some requirements for the wind towers, and it'll also pertain to solar facilities. A lot of the information in there goes back to some of the stuff that 1041 requires in here. And I think at the time, the main person recently is, when we did a master plan back in 2001, there's in the majority of the areas east of Trinidad, or what they call in a rural resource area, and based on public comments and public hearings that we had at that time, those rural resource areas were areas that you wanted development, such as wind towers, gas development. That's where you wanted the development to take place. Number one, because we have so much privately owned land, and so that's where a lot of this came about. The changes in 2010.
Basically, this is just a updated our land use guidance. Regulation.
Yeah, and all we're doing is adding solar facilities in these regulations.
So you mentioned 2001. It's 2001 or 2010.
We did the original master plan in 2001, and we updated the regulations in 2001 at the same time. When Mr. Valdez was in 2010, they came back and just updated the land use regulations, and that's when the solar facilities, I guess, supposedly were supposed to be put in here and was in left out.
And therefore, when you find that out that you're presenting to us, that's indicates solar.
Solar farms, yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, these regulations both pertain to solar farms and wind tower farms. Because if you get towards the end of the 11-28, as used in these Household 1040 regulations, major facilities of a public utility shall not include small energy system as defined in section 7.13, wind farms as defined in 7.14, or solar farms as defined in the one that I did. So they're not required, as long as they're in ranchette or agriculture zone. Okay. If they are proposed for a urban residential or rural residential zone, which are most of the areas that are close to town. Okay. If they want to propose something in there, they have to go to 1041. If they're out in the rural areas like in Ranchette or culture like,
and to your knowledge, these proposed changes would pretty much be consistent with any other
Yeah, these solar farms, if we add these in, they're quite a bit more elaborate and require more information than the majority of your solar facilities in the state.
When these solar facilities are mentioned or wind facilities, whose responsibility is it doing?
The PUC requires them to basically do a decommissioning. I think the commissioners did on the last one that they require them some kind of bond for decommissioning.
That was in 2015. Yeah. And I remember, I don't recall 100% if that I was attending those meetings back then because I was thinking about running for office at that time. And during the groundbreaking ceremonies, Gary Hill, former commissioner Gary Hill, and I discussed that. And I can't recall Bob if that was. I want to say yes.
Yeah, I think it's 7.14 of the regulations, project reclamation. A lot of that stuff is in here. A reclamation bond shall mean the amount equal to 100% of such costs. That's all in the new, that we're going to be requiring, it's a new requirement.
So we would think, is that in the form of a bond?
Yeah. It calls for equal to 100% reclamation bond.
We have anything else, or do we have anybody on the line for and or against for testimony today?
No, sir, I see none.
Okay, we will entertain a motion at this time.
Motion to approve the amendment to the Los Angeles County Land Use Regulation Support Farms.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner Lucero. All my efforts. Appreciate it.
What was that number that you said that would include solar along with minor facilities? Was it 11 something? One rec. It was 11 something.
As far as the reclamation?
No, not the reclamation. Or when you said that it would include solar now where they don't have to go to the 1041. 11:15. Okay, thank you.
Okay. And thank the Planning Commission for finally convening. I know it's been tiresome for everybody with COVID, and they haven't had a chance to get together. So please press on or give them a big thank you for the report. Everyone could be. Thanks, welcome. We'll call you. Okay, we go back to our regular business here. Item 8, new business. Consideration of postponing employee FICA Social Security tax payments until January 1st, 2021. Chavez or Strong Camp, who's
Kim, are you there? You are. Okay.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm not sure if you want me to explain what this is or if you have any questions, or I'm here for whatever you need.
Kim, give a brief rundown as to what exactly this is, please.
Okay. So what this is it's something that was sent out by the federal government for employees to do away with paying their Social Security, their portion of the Social Security tax for September, October, November, and December of 2020. It also says that they have to start paying it back starting January 2021, which would in turn mean a double payment back by every employee. It's not a pick and choose by employee, it's a county option, and so it's either all or none that are joining. I ran my September 30th FICA payments, and the total for that for county employees only is $10,131.49. That would be a savings they would have per pay period, but they would also have to repay that back come January 2021 for however long we took that. And it's on the Social Security tax.
Based on that information, Kim, how many, if any, departments were requesting this?
I've only been questioned by one department, and that was the detention, the sheriff's jail employees that through one voice, Sergeant Dennis had asked me why we didn't begin that in September, and I indicated to her that it had to be a board choice, and so this is why it's on the agenda now.
The concern I have with that is it's hard enough making the low salaries we have now. Well, they've had an increase recently, and hopefully we'll be able to assist them in the future with more revenue. But you have to save it now and to pay double in January makes no sense to me. I think that would hinder our employees and our staff, put them in a financial conundrum to moving forward with assisting them, especially right after the holidays when everything is due, either credit cards or monthly payments and everything slows down, utilities increase. We might put our staff in a position where they would be contacting our local human services for assistance because it's put a bigger strain on our local economy as well. In my opinion, I think we would put our employees, if we had to choose countywide, in a really tough spot.
I agree. And in addition to that, it's unclear on what would happen to the money owed if an employee were to leave prior to the payback. So it's pretty unclear how the whole thing is going to work.
Thank you, Kim. And I think in a sense, it could be creating a liability. As you explained, it's all or none. I mean, if we say yes to something like this, obviously we're going to be forcing some employees that might not be on board with this to actually forego the Social Security tax for 3 months and then not have to pay it back come 2021. I think, you know, at this point in time, there's liability, could be a liability on the employee side as well as the county.
Do we have any other questions for Ms. Chavez? So, Ms. Chavez, basically what is in front of us is consideration whether to or not to postpone the tax payments, correct?
That is correct, and I would just like to have something in writing so that if the same staff that was inquiring at the end of August, just to let them know that it was taken to the Board of County Commissioners and what the decision was during this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Nelson, I have a question under FLSA. Do the commissioners need to make a position on this, or do we just not, we can listen to the opinions that are being posed with, but do we need to make a consideration whether to or not to?
My understanding that how it is worded is that the decision of the employer, so that the employer, the judge has to make a decision whether or not they intend to take advantage of this as it worded from the employer.
Could you repeat what Pam said, please? It's hard to hear her on our end.
Basically, she said we have to, as an employee, take a position. Employer has to take a position. So, having said that, if there's no more questions or concerns, then I can motion at this time.
I'd like to make a motion for consideration of not postponing the employee FICA Social Security payments until January 1, 2021. So, in a sense, leave the way it is.
I'll second that motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item B, consideration of Colorado Retirement Association Retirement Plan and Trust Agreement. Please, that be Ms. Chavez again.
Yes, commissioners. A few weeks back, we sat with our Colorado Retirement Association representative, and we went over our agreements for both the 401A plan for the retirement for employees and also the deferred compensation plan. There was just some cleanups and that we had to do. The last one was, I believe, a few years back for both plans. Some of the laws have changed, so we had to update that. And also they changed their name from Colorado County's Official Employees Retirement Association just to Colorado Retirement Association. And so they just wanted to update our agreement, participation agreement.
Do you have any questions from the board? Ms. Nelson, do you have any concerns? Okay, so it just looks like it's housekeeping. Entertain a motion at this time.
Motion to update the Colorado Retirement Association Retirement Plan Trustee to this branch.
I second the motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item C, consideration of Colorado Retirement Association deferred compensation plan. Mrs. Chavez.
Commissioners, again, this is the same thing as the retirement, except for it's a 457 deferred comp plan, which means the employees are not mandated to join this. It's voluntary deferred that they put into a retirement plan. And again, just some cleanup on the participation agreement was needed, name change, the law changes, and that's about it.
Do we have any questions from the board? Any concerns from Ms. Nelson? Entertain a motion, please.
I'd make a motion for consideration of the Colorado Retirement Association for compensation plan. To update the language.
Okay.
Second motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item D, consideration of incentivized retirement. Ms. Chavez, one more for you.
One more for me. I'm glad they put them all in a row. So a few meetings back, we had a discussion on the incentivized retirement for employees who have been here 5 years or more and between the ages of 62 and 65. We have allowed the incentivized retirement, which allows an employee to retire early and the county continues to pay their insurance for the years that they are 62 to 65. However, we haven't opted into this for the past few years. And I just need something in writing so that I haven't had any employees ask me about it for 2021, but I just would like to have something in writing saying we did bring it to the board and there was a vote taken and what the decision was.
Refresh everybody's memory. This was implemented years ago when funding was short and they were offering this to our aging employees to cut expenses for the county. I think it was an effective tool at that time. In my opinion, I don't think, especially if no one's requesting it, that we offer considering it at this time. So, any questions or concerns from the board? Entertain a motion, please.
I'd like to make a motion is going to be just for voting consideration of the same retirement for this group.
Second motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item D, consideration of a round of liquor license renewal. Ms. Nelson?
Commissioners, I reviewed this application.
She said she could read the application. She has no concerns for those on the phone. With that, do you have any questions or concerns? Entertain a motion, please.
Motion to approve Romero Liquors liquor license renewal.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes, item F, consideration of Royal Tavern liquor license renewal. Again, Mrs. Nelson.
I reviewed this application. It is complete. I have no concerns.
She just repeated herself for the record. Any questions or concerns? If not, entertain a motion, please.
I can make a motion to consideration of the board will cover it and leave for next approval.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Good luck to these two entities that have been long-standing, good-standing San Luis County businesses. Hope to see you there for many, many years to come. Item G, consideration of Los Angeles County proposed budget for 2021. Mr. Harmony?
Commissioners, before you is the proposed 2021 budget, and I would ask Finance Director Christy Coberly to chime in.
Good morning. I think Michael, is he in the audience? Michael Erica?
Yes,
so do you want him to actually explain DHS? Because DHS is a summary in mind, but he might want to actually discuss his a little bit more in depth if you'd like.
Sure, we can start with Mr. Aragon. Mr. Aragon, would you please come to the podium? Raise your right hand.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
So in front of you, let me start off with, first off, thank you, Ms. Coberly, for the efforts put into getting this budget realigned. And, it was an extensive process for the first time, but we are extremely pleased proposal in front of you today. Christy, did you have specifics on what you would like to cover?
No, I didn't know if you wanted to maybe like read your message to kind of explain how each program, like percent wise, I thought you might want to do that since you did a great job on the message.
Certainly. So we get one of the things that I expressed to Christy was we really need a much more comprehensive definition of the funding mechanisms and models of the budget, so it's a little more transparent to the public, to you as commissioners. In front of you, the first section of this budget proposal is multiple items regarding federal, state, and county allocations and how those break apart. If you will look on the second page, we begin with our salary schedule as well as our county administration. And these are simply breakdowns and definitions of how each funding allocation that come out of the federal or state as a grant are allocated to the department, what the county match is, what we received for fiscal 2021 as a proposed allocation, and what we are proposing as a county match. Again, we realize that as we work the budget, we will have to realign some of those items. Additionally, I provided some of the definitions when available regarding the activity-based costing or the actual job duties assigned to staff in order to receive those funding allocations. Our most complex of these is our child welfare unit. We have multiple allocations that come down that are either 100% coverage by the state and federal dollars, either a 90% match from federal or state and a 10% county, and or an 80-20 percentage match. Our 90-10 is specific to staffing. This 90-10 allocation funds one of our child welfare caseworkers. We were provided that by the state as a support system for staffing child support, child welfare case managers. Also because we, within the community, the licensing and credentialing of caseworkers is extremely difficult to come by. And so this was developed in an effort to support that. We received two different models of funding for child welfare. First is our child welfare block grant. That is either an 80-20%, so it's kind of a odd breakout where part of it is 80-20, 20% match on the county, and once that's exhausted, we then have 100% coverage. Same applies to our core services, which is primarily focused on family reunification and mental health providers, and so that's also an 80-20 and 100%. But there's a third model of the core child welfare, which is automatically 100%, and covers the cost of our special economic assistance program, which is providing families in need with emergency costs, our substance abuse treatment, and also our mental health. So that is part of the 100% coverage from Point Go. Additional to that, you will see breakouts of our child care program, our food assistance and fraud, child support enforcement, adult and aging, low-income energy assistance, and I would like to just point out that LEAP will begin on November 1 of this year. DHS was able to secure part of the pilot programming funding again to support that. Marketing will be going out next week to help support local residents who are in need of LEAP services. And we will have a tech that's identified and dedicated to LEAP services to assist in providing guidance and application completion, follow-up, and ensuring that the client that is working with us is capable of qualifying and taking those services.
Question for
yes.
So the LEAP program, we had, Greg Aragon had farmed that out to
Goodwill Colorado.
So you're saying you're
so we're still partnering. Correct. We're still partnering with Goodwill Colorado to provide the LEAP services. Well, we're doing the advertisement, but we're also doing a step-by-step application process to DHS office. So those clients who don't have access to a computer or are incapable of getting to an application will have a dedicated tech that they can contact directly, and then they'll walk them through that process and get the application submitted for them. They'll also do follow-up on application submissions to identify whether they're through the process.
And following all COVID?
Correct.
Protocols.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So primarily it'll either be via email or phone that we can do those applications.
Okay. Can you do that clarification? Sorry.
Sure. Additional, all of our other programming is broken out. One of the things I'd like to point out though is based on prior year allocations to current year allocations, I did do a percentage of either increase or decrease regarding the programs. Specifically, you're gonna see some increases that look very large. But this is not because we received additional allocation funding from the state. It's because in the past we've either underfunded those programs, and we really need to support those programs better. And so you're gonna see some of those allocations looking much higher than others. But realistically, if we look at the total allocation for the budget from last year to this year, it's about a 20% cut off the top of my head, if I remember correctly.
So on the case, Grace, I'm looking at some of the revenue that you had for food assistance benefits from 3.8 million dollars to 6.5. That those are the difference that you speak of. That's one of the ones that I highlighted. The other one is the cover award program. You know, almost 50% increases.
Correct.
So when we looked at when I looked at the July 2020 program activity, you know, $8 million. So you're saying go for adjustments in line item allocations to the proper program.
Correct. Yes. So again, like for instance, I'll give you a great example. If you look at the last page of those, you know, single entry point, which is our adult aging services program. This is a program that I'd like to let the commissioners know has taken the hardest hit regarding budget cuts from the state. This program prior to was what we considered 100% payback or reimbursement programming. That is no longer really the case with this, although we receive 100% of the funds. It is now what they call a pay per month per member model, meaning that the services rendered by DHS staff is paid at a percentage rate, and that money comes down, that becomes our money, but it's based on the number of clients we have and the services rendered. So in the past, where we would receive a state allocation of over $1 million in that program, which had 100% drawdown, right now we're looking at about a 32% cut in that program because the pay per member per month model has limited the income coming in. So instead of a prepayment of $84,000 a month, we're now averaging between $44,000 and $50,000 a month.
As far as per member per
So as far as the population itself, that is not, that's still 100% drawdown for the services rendered to the community. What I'm talking about is that administrative cost control that come in. So it should not impact the community members as much, but it's definitely going to have us looking at streamlining a lot of the administrative services in-house to ensure that we're utilizing everyone in the best capacity. Because we still have a sustainable model to maintain the staffing we have, but additional staff is not an option.
So So we could be encumbering salaries, but not receiving the payment.
And the salaries in the past then were covered by what the state's old model used to be. So would you look at cutting staff if necessary?
If necessary, but at this time, and I've worked with Kristen very closely on identifying sustainability of the program with the staffing we have. As I mentioned, right now, with the income coming in, we also identified our home care allowance programming contract that we have with the state that is also a single entry point funded program. So we're able to draw that money over to single entry point to backfill any losses or overages for the month. So at this point, we're evening out, essentially, month to month. And so my concern is this year, we will not have to cut staff at this point, but in the future, if we see a decrease in client, it might be a real thing.
So there is a formula, it's a ratio per FTE per number of community.
Correct. This is the first of a new model that the state is moving to. So it really is about the workload that DHS is carrying in order to fund those programs. I don't necessarily see that as a future piece for other programs because they're funded differently based on federal guidelines. This is a federally funded program, but this is a program that has had multiple issues with the piece of the funding because it was 100% drawdown. And I think other counties were drawing down funding and allocating it to areas. And I don't think it was on purpose. I think they were just misallocating those funds down because there was no clear guidance on it. And so now the state's really putting that transparency and guidance in place for staff to ensure that they're utilizing those funds correctly.
I say there's possibly some oversight. Maybe this is a necessary step that they have to take at this time. We've had some funds we've had to sit back and stuff. So this might be, everything new is difficult times for the program. This might be challenging, however, it may be for the best of taxpayers at this time. So I guess that remains to be seen. From the board, as long as we're not in a situation where we're having to lay folks off and budget cuts like that, let's see how it goes. Now, did they mention anything, sure enough, how long this plan would be in place? Is this their new model that we moving forward, or is this temporary because of the short post?
No, this plan was already in works prior to COVID and prior to the pandemic and the shortfalls. I believe this was a concern in prior years. DHS, Los Angeles County DHS has been substantial in their audit process with SEP. Single entry point, we've had no issues or concerns. We've been able to clarify any concerns that they've had, and we've been pretty transparent across the board. So that, one of the things though that I do think, and I think you just kind of hit the nail on the head here, is the fraud rate. The state has now mandated the state of Colorado that fraudulent concerns are at about a 26% rate statewide, all 64 counties combined. The federal government is requiring the state to be down to 3% or below in fraud rate in order to maintain funding from the federal government for programming. And what they've identified is that because the Central Point is part of the Healthcare and Policy Finance Department, which funds our cash assistance programs, which is food, Medicaid, things like that, they're also concerned that part of the issue is a technical issue with the engagement of clients and facilitating their eligibility for services. So what they're saying is that the system that we use in order to determine eligibility for clients is not transparent enough. And so the State Office of Information Technology is working on revamping that program in order to ensure that as tech support eligibility, we're not fraudulently creating that component. We're able to better process that in a clearer fashion without creating fraud. So they're concerned that a lot of that 26% is not local residents frauding the system, it's that it's internal errors created by staff not being able to process eligibility correctly.
Thank you for the overview. After 3 years of reviewing these, and now this is very well. I like the opening definitions and the statements of allocations and the access very good. Mrs. Coberly, I'm sure, worked hand in hand with you, and those efforts have been very well done. Now, I also would like to make a comment regarding our logos that we have more of a new logo. It's awesome. I don't know if the camera can see. I'm not really sure if the camera there or the Department of Human Services. I did have a conversation with Mr. Aragon and Mr. Burnham regarding possibly getting some copyrights on those who move over or register. And that way we can't, they can't be manipulated on some awful sites that are moving around. So, Mrs. Coburn, do you have anything to add regarding Department of Human Services proposed budget?
I don't. Are you ready for some highlights on our proposed budget?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Aragon.
Thank you.
Okay, Mrs. Coburn, you have the floor.
Okay, so if we go to page 3 in the books, I can explain what our assessed valuation, this is just estimated, is $367,009,340. So that's our assessed valuation as of August. So what that is our, with our mill levy at 9.357, that makes property tax is $3.4 million. And within that $3.4 million, general fund will get 7.1 mils, contingent is 0.25, capital expenditure is 0.35, and DHS, last year they were 1.65, I think it was, so I took them to 1.7. It's not a lot, but at least we gave them a little bit more. If you look at general fund revenue and expenditures, it's a balanced budget, so it's $8,279,320. So that's an increase of about $365,000
last year
compared to last year, correct.
Christy, can you, we lost you for about 10 seconds.
Okay.
So can you back up, please?
Sure.
General fund.
Okay, general fund, it's a balanced budget. So revenue expenditures are $8,279,320. And you'll see that on page 5 and 6, the summary of revenue and expenditures. You'll look on page 5 and 6. And so that's an increase of $365,000. And the majority of that is coming from public safety. So I spoke with Henry, and he allowed us to actually have additional spending for the public safety. So within that, he let us keep $200,000 for the sheriff, the coroner, $50,000, emergency management, $50,000, and the health department, $80,000, so that we could actually have a balanced budget. So I do appreciate that from our district attorney. And next year, we'll have to look at that to see how we'll handle that. Within general fund, I had budgeted $200,000 for the Fisher's Peak, but when I just saw that that agreement, we only need to budget $50,000. So I will make that change before the next time I come before you, okay? Let's see. So let's see. If we look on page, if we look on page 6, I'd like to kind of compare a little bit compared to this budget and last year's budget. So I already spoke about county administration. See, last year we were at 206, it's 404, but I'm going to adjust that 200,000 because that's where I have it as an expense. So that'll go down. I do want to bring forward to, because I had a discussion with Michael about continuing payroll and myself continue to keep doing the financials for DHS. So we'll have to come to some kind of agreement on that payment because we're not contractual and I don't want to continue doing hourly. So we'll have to come to some kind of agreement with Pam and Michael on us continuing to do financials for DHS. So that is included in this one here. And I think we were talking about hours, budgeting so many hours that I've done, and the same as payroll. So that is included in this budget. And our maintenance department, so our maintenance department actually, this year in 2020, he has a temporary summer position that he never filled. So we're gonna eliminate that position and we're going to increase his wages because he's doing the job right now. So he didn't really get a salary increase. He's just getting compensated for what he's already doing on that one. Let's see what else. In every department, I actually did budget overtime for everybody, because a lot of times we're having this overtime and we're not budgeting for it. So we did look at that to give everybody a small portion of overtime budget in each department. I also did longevity personal days as well, because those also get paid out as well in October, November, and December. One thing I did forget is the fire ban, because I don't think I attended that meeting. I apologize about that, but I did forget the fire ban. So I need to budget for revenue coming in for the fire ban, and also to an expenditure for the fire ban. And I'll have a discussion with Phil Dorenkamp on that expenditure and the revenue on that. Any questions?
But I'll update the board, Christy. The fire chiefs, my understanding is they will be getting that new language to the board.
Okay.
That the board asked them to include in that ordinance.
Okay. Are there any questions on general fund before I move to another fund?
I don't see any, Christy.
Nope. Okay. Phil, do you want to talk a little bit about road and bridge, or do you want me to just to say revenue expense, or do you want to talk about that?
It's basically, as we've done in the past, we're looking at going after two grants next year instead of three, since the Department of Local Affairs has reduced the cycles from two to three and reduced the amount of funds in each one of those. We'll also look at doing some chip seal and some chloriding. Otherwise than that, it's pretty much maintenance.
Okay. So I wanted to talk a little bit about our airport. We know our airport, you know, it has assets, but it doesn't have cash. So if you look at page 61 of our airport, and that's kind of shows our revenue expenditures, but so revenue is 231,000 and expenditures are 677. But within that, I've budgeted 379,000 as depreciation. So, and that's something we have to have in there. So technically I think there's just a loss of like our difference of 66,000 of where we'll have to use, I guess, the asset or the fund balance for that. Because we know the airport is not self-sufficient. So any questions on the airport? One thing I did add to the airport for this budget was the ground lease that you approved. I'm running that in as revenue, and the farm lease. So that's additional revenue for the airport. So it's nice to see a little bit of revenue coming into the airport. So I did budget revenue for that.
So, Christy, Tina says that the airport fund, to include the depreciation in there, plus the allocation that we put in there is a net loss.
Yes, it is. We do know that. You know, there are 7 million in assets that we actually have in the airport. So that's what it's running off right now. And we could always look to have general fund, and we talk about this every year, making a payment over to fulfill that loss in airport.
Over $500,000, yeah.
And if that flight school comes to a reality, that would also be revenue for the airport, correct? And you probably have a line item in here for that.
Okay. Yeah, that's something that hopefully that'll, you know, happen this year in 2021.
Yeah, I hope so. I haven't heard anything from them since the initial meeting, though.
And then contingent, all it is is the property tax that will go into contingent for 2021 is 91,000. And we don't have any expenditures other than anything in emergency, you know, if something hazardous, something happened to the county. So we'll continue to keep building this fund so that we can, any fires, floods, anything. That's what this budget is, this fund is for. Capital expenditure on page 68. So this one here I'm worried about because, you know, this fund is dwindling down. You can see that we're going to end with maybe $580,000 in this account. And that all depends, I'm saying, because we're doing our phase two for Los Animas County right now. So the property tax that'll come into capital expenditure is $128,453 on that. Let's just So I did budget, I am going to reappropriate the fund balance just in case we have anything that comes about for capital expenditures that we need to do. So I did reappropriate $151,000. And then also too, we have pictometry. I think this is the last payment that we agreed to with pictometry. So it's $30,358 for that. So, and then it should show that we'll end with a fund balance of $428,000. So hopefully maybe by the way the selection goes, maybe we can actually increase that if 1A passes. So we could actually have some capital expenditure to continue to fix our building or any other property that belongs to the county. Let's see, anything else? Everything else is lottery. Lottery is, I did appropriate, let's see, what did I appropriate? I appropriated $303,000 or any maybe a cash match for if we decide to do GOCO for the fairgrounds or whatever we're going to decide to do with the fairgrounds master plan. That's on page 73. You want to see what I appropriated for there? $7,500 for any kind of improvements at our fairgrounds for like operating that Kenny does, and $303 if we're going to do a cash match for if we're going to do the master plan for the fairgrounds. Our PILT fund, that has a nice balance, but we're going to give $1 million to Road and Bridge. And then I'm going to change that to $50,000 for the Fisher's Peak. So just so that we can actually continue to keep using PILT for Road and Bridge on that. The LEAF DUI fund, the Sheriff's Department used most of, that's on page 77 if you want to look at the fund balance. They used a good portion of that because I think we had $35,000 in there when we started 2020. And they used that, I think, for, I think, bulletproof vests or taser. Some, they used it for something. So we're going to have to start rebuilding that again for them. And I think I budgeted $1,800 for expense and $900 cash coming in, revenue for them for 2021. And then we have the jail fund. Bill and I talked a little bit about the jail fund yesterday to the balance in there. So that's for any capital improvements for the jail facility. So you need to watch how we spend that just in case anything large comes for any kind of a capital improvement. And right now, Kenny has spent a lot of money on the improvements to that building this year. So we know things are, you know, the building was built in what, did we say 2001? I'm not too sure. I think it was 2001. Anyway, so, you know, we do know that Kenny's going to have to continue to keep fixing anything that breaks in this building.
Yeah, and we know that we've got an HVAC issue that right. is going to need to be addressed there, too, in the jail. So.
We can possibly use this funding for possible matching.
So for the last one is Department of Human Services. So Department of Human Services, as of 2019, we actually started with $79,000 as the fund balance. And if we follow our budget correctly for 2020, we'll end with $76,000. And I'm showing it, and it will probably change after Michael spoke to you a little bit about the state with them decreasing the funding. But right now I'm showing that, we have $12 million in revenue for federal and state. Our maintenance of effort is $728,000 from the county. And our expenditures is $13 million. So that should leave him with a fund balance of $92,000. Like he did tell you, though, single entry point, we did have to pay them the full $411,000 back. You'll see that in the next financials that I bring forward to the county to show that we did pay the SEP in full to where we don't have those additional funds in our bank account. So he will end, hopefully he'll end with 92,000 in his bank account if we continue to watch budget. So altogether, what we're gonna appropriate for 2021 is 47,828,951. That includes our appropriate reserves that is included in with that. So we are reappropriating some of our funds for these for each fund that doesn't have enough money. Any questions?
Any questions or comments? Christy, thank you. That's I really enjoy going through these both documents, the one for the proposed budget for Los Angeles County and DHS. Thank you for the work.
Yes, Christy, thanks, and good job on this budget.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know if we actually need a motion to accept the both budgets this time. Since it's just proposed, I don't think we need to take an action on this consideration or discussion, right?
It's only that I'm saying we have to present it to you. So there's no approving. We're just presenting it. That's all we did.
And I concur to Felix's comments. Good job to you. And the biggest one I'd like to say is the ending of the fund balance for DHS for the first time since many of us have seen, especially since the last few years, the implementation of oversight with yourself, and Chavez, the team, Susero, and everyone else who've been involved, plus all the staff and employees over at DHS for their consideration of really watching it and being partaking in this achievement has been tremendous. It's a great day when I see that for me as a commissioner for seeing it in the deficit for so many years, so good job to everybody. Okay, item H, consideration of 20-C002, change order number one, extension, completion deadline. Mr. Markey.
Commissioners, before you is IFB 20-C002, change order number one, completion deadline extension. This is a project that was awarded to Dalton Electric for the electrical improvements on the third floor DA's offices. And Dalton Electric had approached me prior to the deadline stating that as per in the change order, that they had run into some times when the courts, frankly, would shut their work down. So they'd have to stop and send their crews elsewhere, even looking through the court dockets that were given to us. They tried working within those court dockets, and there were still times when the courts required them to shut down. When I asked Mr. Dalton about what he had anticipated, they had been shut down, and he said about 2 weeks. So I'd asked the board to approve this deadline extension. The original deadline was for September 30. I'll ask the board to extend it to October 14th. And also I asked the board to forego any of their late completion penalties since they did submit the request prior to the deadline. There'll be no change in the contract price, just an extension of the deadline.
Does the courts have the conversation directly with Dalton, or do they contact you first?
They go straight to Dalton. Or his crew. And Commissioner, where Dalton's at in their work process is the DA's wanting some floor outlets in the center of what they're calling the conference room. and he wants to have the wire buried in the floor. Well, the floor is concrete. So they happened to go on there with literally a jackhammer and jackhammer a trench. As a matter of fact, they were doing it yesterday. I don't know if any of you were in the courthouse yesterday at the time. They were jackhammering, and it is allowed. So I can understand why the courts have asked him to shut down during.
So I'm looking at these work hours and completion deadline, and I see where we said that, or where this document says that it has to be Monday through Friday, 7 to 5. And in this case, is there any way that you can work on the weekends?
Yes, Commissioner, thanks for bringing that up. We have been working with Dalton to not only work on weekends, but on a holiday and after work if they so desire, and they've been working it out with Maintenance Director Bowman.
It's a tough getting the progress done in our courthouse when we have so many offices open and lab open. And not any other questions or anything?
Motion to approve the Los Angeles County. Whoops. Motion to approve 20-C-002, Chamber Number 1, Extension of Completion Deadline.
I second that motion, and also I'm putting in there I'm waiving the penalties by moving the not should it be another extension requested, the work we're able to take.
Correct. Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Consideration of 2010-2020 Residential Rights Month Proclamation.
Commissioners, the county was approached by an organization to, I believe it was COGS, Veronica Mays, to consider proclaiming the month of October as Residents' Rights Month, and Administrative Assistant Paula Cyril drafted a proclamation that's in front of the board for your consideration. Proclamation, Los Angeles County Long-Term Care Residents' Rights Month, October 2020, whereas there are more than 100 individuals living in long-term care facilities in Los Angeles County, and whereas all residents should be aware of their rights so they may be empowered to live with dignity and self-determination, and whereas Region 14 Long-Term Care Ombudsman, along with individuals and groups across the country, will be celebrating Residents' Rights Month with a theme, parentheses, connection matters, in parentheses, to emphasize connections to family, to friends, and to the community as an essential component of good health and quality of life for residents. Now, therefore, let it be resolved that the Board of County Commissioners does hereby proclaim October 2020 as Los Angeles County Long-Term Care Residents Rights Month by the Board of County Commissioners.
Any questions for the judge?
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item J, discussion and consideration of removing contract courthouse improvements. At this time, I have some questions or concerns. We need legal advice, so ask that we table this until we come out of the executive session.
Motion to table the wildland contract for the courthouse improvements until we come out of the executive session.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Financial matters, considerations of bills of payroll for second half of September 2020. Mrs. Coverly.
Los Angeles County. Payroll as of September 30th is $179,024.10. Bills paid on September 16th, $102,690.47. Within there, the elections actually paid $7,830 for ballot concepts, and then grant 88,78, $28,616. Bills paid on September 23rd, $95,758.79. Within that, we paid pictometry $30,000. And then the DA's remodel was $17,430. We have one more. Bills paid on September 30th. That's it. Is $28,434.24. That's it for Los Animas County.
Any questions or concerns? Any motion, please?
Make a motion to approve the bills payable for the second half of September 2020.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Acting in its capacity as the Board of Human Services, considers the bills of payable for second half of September 2020. Ms. Cogarty.
Department of Human Services payroll as of September 30th, $69,467.42. Bills paid on September 16th was $425,327.24. You'll see within that we paid back single entry point, the $411,485. Bills paid on September 24th, $26,651.48. That is, we paid the way this is working is we get healthcare allowance, it's called, for a single entry point. And we've had a liability actually of $26,000. After speaking to another county, the way they do it is they actually pull the money out and they actually deposit it into single entry point. So that's what this is. Because when we did our audit, that money was just sitting in deferred revenue. So we pulled it and now Michael can use it for single entry point. That's what that is. Bills paid on September 24th is $2,516.46. Bills paid on September 30th, $8,921.93. And then another round of bills for MedTrans, that this is 100% program, $5,711.20. And that's it for Department of Human Services.
Thank you. Do we have any questions or concerns from the board?
Motion to approve bills of payroll for the second half of September 2020 from the Board of Human Services.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item 10, executive session. The board will meet the executive session under CRS 24-6-104B. County attorney for the purposes of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions, certificate of occupancy variance, Wilton contract, and HVAC discussions. Your motion.
Second motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. We'll take a 5-minute recess.
Which one do we need him for?
That variance is the one that makes the decision.
No, this would be building variance.
The certificate of occupancy? Who issues? I thought Bob. You do.
Me or Bob Martin? Bob. Bob. Lacero does very little for buildings. I mean, he helps me.
Bill, do you know you're still on, right?
Thank you.
Do you know you're still on?
Thanks, Christy. I will find the mute button and hit it.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. not on.
recording.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Motion to come back to regular session, please.
I make a motion to come back as a regular session.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. We will turn to item J, discussion and consideration of Wilden contract for courthouse improvements. And after exiting executive session and receiving some counsel from our attorney, any questions or discussions at this time regarding that?
And also, Commissioner, this issue was tabled, so you may want to entertain.
So we'll interrupt that from the table version.
I'm going to make a motion to move from the table the discussion consideration of the World Bank contract for the courthouse improvements. And so we can proceed with the motion.
Motion to approve.
Second,
I'm sorry.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Now we're moving forward with the discussion and consideration of the contract for the courthouse improvements.
Motion to approve.
Second.
I'm sorry.
There's no discussion there. Any motion, please?
Okay. Motion to approve the Wildan contract with the amendments that were introduced today for the courthouse improvements.
I second that motion.
Yeah. Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. This time I entertain the motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day out there. Appreciate your time.